HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 190, recorded live Thursday, December 3rd, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with developers Lee Holmes and Jason Shirk.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here on campus at Microsoft in beautiful Redmond, Washington. And it's actually a pleasant day today, and we're in the Commons, which is kind of the central area of the Microsoft campus. And I'm sitting down with Lee Holmes and Jason Shirk. How's it going, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
And you guys work on the PowerShell team. Lee, what do you work on specifically?
I'm a developer on the PowerShell team, and in version 2, I worked on eventing and the transactions and all of the provider infrastructure, the file system and the registry.
Mm-hmm. And Jason, what do you do?
I work on the language, the parser and the interpreter, and did some other things like the comment-based help.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was hardcore into PowerShell. I just thought PowerShell was the greatest thing. And then I needed it less. I use it probably 3 or 4 times a week, but I wouldn't say I'm living in it like I used to. So I have to admit some ignorance around PowerShell 2. I know I've got Windows 7, so I have PowerShell automatically, right? 2.0 ships with a 7, is that right?
Yes, it does, definitely.
And is this a secret different version of like 2.0 dot magical something something, or is 2.0 2.0 for everybody?
2.0 is 2.0 for everybody. It's the same on Windows 7 and all the down-level platforms.
Okay, so existing folks that have got it, listeners who maybe haven't upgraded yet, maybe they've got Vista, they just remove PowerShell and put it back on, or does it upgrade?
They uninstall it, and then they download the Windows Management Pack. And,
oh, that's what it's called,
yes.
Management Pack. Yep. And will their scripts work? Is the language compatible?
Yes, it is backwards compatible. It was a upfront design criteria to make sure that all scripts run in V1 and V2.
Okay.
So it's everything still works.
So I should be able to upgrade without fear, I think is the point.
Exactly.
Now, what about my applications, like my .NET applications that may be hosted PowerShell or talk to those actual assemblies and reference them? Are they going to break?
Yeah, we didn't change the APIs. We added a whole bunch of new APIs to make some things easier.
Mm-hmm.
But the APIs in V1 are still there.
Okay, cool. So PowerShell 2, don't be afraid. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Exactly.
All right, that's cool. So what kind of stuff did you add in the language? Because to be honest, I uninstalled, I reinstalled on my Vista machine, and I got it on my Windows 7 machine. It's still a blue background. It's still a white text. It's a shell. It doesn't exactly advertise its V2-ness.
Exactly.
What's new?
So one of the biggest language features that we added was the ability to write something that looks and behaves like a commandlet, but to write it in PowerShell script.
Mm-hmm.
So getting all the power of being able to operate on objects that are passed through the pipeline.
Like a command that is like verb hyphen noun, like get hyphen cheese,
mm-hmm.
right? And you would write a commandlet with C# or VB, and you'd make it an assembly, and you'd load it into PowerShell, and it would become part of the system, and it would be just the same as the existing commandlets, right? It would be a peer.
Yes.
Of get process and this and that.
And you had to be a C# developer in order to write a commandlet.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can be a scripter and get the same power and flexibility that commandlet authors had in V1. You can get that in V2.
Right, because in PowerShell originally when I wrote a script, it felt like a batch file in the sense that I would write a foo.ps1, and the way I ran it would be .foo.ps1. But when I wanted to chain things together, and that was the magic of PowerShell, right? Being able to change things in a pipeline, I could do it, but it was highly non-trivial.
It's still not trivial. The syntax is a little bit cumbersome,
but
there's a lot of power, a lot more power in V2.
Okay. And I can do this in Notepad. Like I can just write this thing in Notepad?
Absolutely. I wouldn't recommend Notepad, but a lot of people do use Notepad. In V2, we added a new feature, the ISE, the Integrated Scripting Environment. So PowerShell under our ISE is a full-featured editor for PowerShell.
Uh-huh.
And it's designed to make it easy to develop scripts.
And this includes debugging and watches and all that stuff.
It has an integrated debugger in there, definitely. So you can just set breakpoints, hit go, and it'll stop on your breakpoints. You have syntax coloring in the editor.
Mm-hmm.
You have an output pane so you can see the results of running your script.
And I can, now when I write these commandlets, because this new feature, the ability to write commandlets with script is interesting to me, how do I let PowerShell know about it? Because that was one of the things that was confusing about commandlets before, was the, there are all of the ones that PowerShell comes with out of the box, mm-hmm. and then there are the 5 or 6 or 12 I want to add.
So yeah, in V1 you had a snap in, and there was a little bit of work to install that and then load it. Comparing that to like having a script, you have a path and you just run your script that's in the path. Well, the V2 script commandlets are just ordinary scripts. So if you mm-hmm. have a function in your profile or you dot source a script file and so it adds a function to your environment, then you just run it like any other script or any other function.
Now you just said dot source. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to our listeners who may not sure. be familiar with PowerShell what that means?
So dot sourcing is just a way of, if you run a script and there's a function in the script, when the script exits, that function is gone. Mm-hmm. If you dot source the script, then that function will live on after the script is exited and you can run the function later.
And would I just say dot space and then...
Exactly, dot space and then the name of the script.
And it shows up.
Yep.
So I dot source a commandlet and it becomes available.
Yep.
And then
that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is just if it's in a script file, a PS1 file. So you could have get-mything.ps1, and if that's in your path, then it's just automatically...
And I don't have to refer to the .ps1 to do
nope.
it.
Nope.
Well, that's pretty cool. All right, and where's the primary place people go for this kind of stuff?
To go for...
To learn about this. They go to the PowerShell blog, or they go to msdn.com/scripting?
Yeah, Tech Center.
TechNet?
TechNet, sorry. Yeah. TechNet and MSDN are two good places. And the PowerShell blog, of course. There are a lot of good community blogs. MVPs have a lot of interesting blogs, too.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the other language features that were added in V2?
So, yeah, script commands was the big one. We added try-catch, finally.
Okay.
So for C-sharp developers, that's a little more natural than the trap from V1.
Uh-huh. Does it ultimately kind of map to a trap?
Not exactly. They're fairly close, though.
Okay. But the syntax is what I'm familiar with.
Yeah, the syntax, it's more, like I said, it's more familiar. Trap is, you could put a trap anywhere in your script, and, you know, before or after, and if there's an error, then it'll jump to the trap. It's a little bit more like a Visual Basic on error sort of statement. The try catch is scoped, so the errors have to be within the try block, and then, whatever, you know, it'll catch.
Okay. But now I can pick both on error, resume next style scripting, which might be appropriate mm-hmm. for a scripter.
Yep.
And try catch, which might be more palatable for a C# or a VP.NET
exactly.
developer.
Exactly.
All right, cool. Now, what kind of stuff did you work on, Lee?
One of the big improvements I wanted to add on to what Jason had said mm-hmm. is that PowerShell in version 2 is, we like to think about it as PowerShell version 1 that we really wish we could have finished as well. So everybody talks about, hey, you developed this brand new shell.
I love that you came out and said it, you know, PowerShell V1, this time we mean it.
Yeah, well, ultimately you come against scheduling constraints, yeah. you want to get stuff out there, and version 1 was an awesome, awesome product.
Well, and you wanted to ship with wasn't it Windows 2003? What was your ship vehicle for V1?
Our ship vehicle for version 1 was all by itself.
Uh-huh. But it shipped in 2008 server, though, right?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
And that wasn't what drove our ship dates, but we really wanted to make sure we had early, we had a Monad, and we had a bunch of people really excited about it. And
Monad, of course, for the listeners who may not be familiar with some of the buzzwords, of course, was the term that we referred to PowerShell as before the name PowerShell and the icon were kind of revealed.
Right, exactly. That was the code name.
Right. This was when it had .msh or .mush files, which I thought was pretty funny.
Right. And then as we got that, you know, people started using it, we really wanted to be able to support remoting as well.
Yeah.
And remoting in Windows has always been kind of lacking. There's been Telnet, and it kind of got its security upgrades, but nothing really like the implicit SSH kind of experience that people just get to experience mm-hmm. ubiquitous remoting. And one of the huge, huge things we did right in PowerShell version 2 was integrate remoting and in the unique PowerShell style.
And this is what I want to understand, because I hear people who aren't PowerShell people talk about it, and they go, oh, well, you know, I already have that. I can just shush into my machine. And that's just a remote secure terminal.
Yep. Yep.
Now, can I do that in PowerShell? I can just say, I want to talk to that machine, but I want the DOS prompt and the DOS prompt. So look at me, the PowerShell prompt to be here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can do interactive remoting.
Interactive remoting. Okay.
And that's, we'd be ridiculous as a shell if we didn't support that. Okay. Just like in version one of PowerShell, we supported text manipulation, right? That's a shell you need to be able to launch programs and manipulate text.
But is it like a secure sockets kind of a thing with certs? I mean, like, what's the transport there? I mean, am I really shushing into the PowerShell or is it something else?
PowerShell remoting builds upon WS management, so WS man remoting.
Okay.
And that can be secured, you know, by default, it's going to be Windows authentication inside of your domain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's encrypted by Kerberos.
Oh, okay.
But then you can also do over SSL on the internet, tons and tons of options, and they're all secure.
Now, you said WS management. That sounds like WS star.star and all the kind of web services standard. So is that a standard or is that a Microsoft thing?
Yep. WS management is a standard.
Okay.
And our version, which is a Windows remote management, WinRM, is an implementation of that standard.
Oh, okay. So it's something that sits on top of that?
Yep.
Does this mean that PowerShell can talk to non-Windows machines with over this WS management thing?
No. In addition to the straight WS management protocol, there's requires that there's an endpoint that can speak it as well.
Mm.
So you're connecting to a PowerShell host on a remote system,
okay.
And that participates in the remoting session as well. So the traditional things supported in WS management, those are administrative actions. So I can enumerate things and I can invoke actions. So on top of that, we've built the PowerShell remoting that says, hey, create an object and start streaming things back to me and create a run space and some of the things that are required in a full-fledged PowerShell remoting session.
Okay, so that means I'm not doing an interactive shell. I'm on my machine with a shell, but I'm saying I want to have some objects from that machine and that machine and that machine all come over to me and participate in some kind of a larger pipeline?
It's still interactive, just like a regular PowerShell prompt.
Right, but I'm just saying it's not interactive in the sense that the C:\ that I'm looking at on the screen isn't over there. It's over here where I'm at.
I guess it's the same with any protocol, is that your server is going to say, hey, here's my prompt, and then the server implementation is going to send it on to the person listening for it.
Right. I guess what I'm trying to understand is that, let's say I've got machine A and machine B.
Yep, right.
I'm sitting on machine A, and machine B is headless. Mm-hmm. Right? It's got no monitor. I want to do one of two things. Let's say the first example. I want to go and walk around his file system.
Yep.
And I want to shush into that machine. I want to telnet.
That's absolutely what PowerShell remoting supports.
Okay.
So you go onto that machine, you run get process, and you're getting the processes that are on that machine.
Right.
You do a dir, you're getting those files.
Okay. And I'm seeing them on machine A.
Yep.
And then scenario B is that, let's say I wanted to go and enumerate the hardware, the certificates on that machine, right? It's something that's very intimate to that machine.
Yep.
I want to see the certificate store, poke around in the registry, but I want to do it from here so that I can also poke around in the registry on my machine A and maybe do a diff or do some comparisons.
Yep. Yep.
How would I do something like that? And is that the same scenario?
That's kind of like the second way that PowerShell remoting supports.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your interactive version, but then there's also a version that's just mass automation.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an invoke command, and you can say, I want to invoke this command on a remote machine.
Ah, there we go.
And then you can assign the results of that action, and you can store it in a variable.
That's cool. Hey, everybody. This is Scott coming at you from another place and time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work, and you know writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. Not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight. All shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. This is why I like version version twos of products where I can code by subtraction. Because with version one at my last job, we did a bunch of big management of a large number of systems. You might have 20, 30, 50 machines, and we'd have to go talk to all these machines. But this was in a PowerShell V1 time frame. So I actually went and wrote a Windows service that would host an instance of a PowerShell run space, and I wrote a poor man's remoting.
Yep.
And what I ended up using was your export CLI XML export to a local, I mean, on the remote machine, I would basically take an object that I would, and then serialize it, shuttle it across, and then, you know, rehydrate it. And it was cheesy to say the least. And I'm hearing you say that I can throw all of that away.
Yeah, you know, the PowerShell remoting still builds on that really core concept of the objects that come back from a remote machine
mm-hmm.
aren't live objects anymore. They're really rich right. state bags, and we do a lot of work to let you still use the PowerShell primitives. So one of the things that makes PowerShell so great is that mm-hmm. you can do a, for example, call the get process command, and that's going to return a list of the processes running on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the plain text world, you might be dumping that through awk and sed and all these things to get out how much memory is this using.
Right.
But in PowerShell, those are straight properties on the output. So then I can do a filter on, you know, get process where the processes handles are more than, you know, filtering on handle count or process IDs.
Mm-hmm.
Now our PowerShell remoting keeps that data integrity. You run that on your remote machine
mm-hmm.
and you're still going to get that same power and that same flexibility on every client that connects to it. And you can easily fan this stuff out to thousands of servers. One of the things that really drove our design of remoting in PowerShell V2 was just the fact of network throttling, where people were trying to run these huge WMI operations against their domain,
mm-hmm.
and they would time out, and they would take so much time because you've just got this one machine that's becoming the bottleneck.
Right.
And so in PowerShell remoting, we implemented throttling limits and stuff. So you can create this huge script,
mm-hmm.
say, I want to run this against 1,000 machines. And then you can say, well, I want to be nice and I want to do this to 10 machines in a batch. So we'll go out, and as soon as we're done processing one machine, we'll put in another one. So you're throttling basically a limit of 10 machines there.
Now, is that part of this job management thing that's added? Is that a new thing in PowerShell? Start job and...
Yep, jobs are another great example of that. And the remoting kind of builds on this idea of a universal code execution model.
Okay.
So I have a script block, you know, a little chunk of PowerShell commands.
And a script block is anything in curly braces, is that right?
Yep. And so I can run that in my local PowerShell session,
mm-hmm.
or I can run that on a remote machine, or I can run that in a local job, and they all go through the same infrastructure. You can wait on the results of one of these things, you can read from them, you can wait for one to complete. So it all goes through the same idea, and then mm-hmm. you just get this, I run this code, and I'm going to run it wherever I want, and it's all consistent.
And a script block is a thing. I mean, there's like an object called script block, right, that holds this stuff. So from a language perspective, that script block is like a molecule filled with atoms, which is the abstract syntax tree that expresses what's going on.
Yep, exactly.
It's so nice when you interview somebody and you like kind of put something really deep, and then the language designer's like, oh, yeah, that's exactly right. Silence. I'm guessing here.
Yeah,
that's how I would do it.
A script block is really just script. You know, everything between the curlies is just code.
Uh-huh. But you have a parser, and then that sits as an abstract syntax tree, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go and execute that. So PowerShell is an interpreted language.
Yes,
is that
PowerShell
right?
is interpreted, exactly.
So what does this mean in the larger context of dynamic languages at Microsoft? Because there's all this interest in the DLR. There's IronRuby. There's IronPython. There's a lot of interest in that, but it doesn't appear that that's something that's like, I don't know. We don't run around singing to the hills about how amazing the DLR is, the dynamic language runtime that sits on top of the CLR. And in that PowerShell was happening at the same time as the DLR was emerging. What does it mean for PowerShell in a world where the DLR may in fact be the choice?
Yeah, the DLR is very interesting for PowerShell. They implement a lot of the code generation aspects of dynamic languages, obviously, that PowerShell could take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we've been looking at, you know, from prototyping purposes, just to see what we can do with it and whatnot. In terms of schedules, you know, it's part of different product, and it's not part of Windows, and so we haven't been able to take advantage of it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the biggest factor so far. I'm talking with the DLR team, and in the past they've been saying, we'd love you guys to be using us, but don't start using us just yet because we're making changes, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that while you bringing the DLR into the world of PowerShell might be architecturally tidy and might be aesthetically pleasing, it's not going to do anything for you other than allow you to, as I said before, code by subtraction. You'd be able to say, oh, look, we don't need to use our AST. We'll use theirs now.
Yeah, that's one definite benefit. There's some other benefits of, maybe interop with, C#. Since C# will be using DLR as well, that might make some C# developers' lives easier that are writing tools for PowerShell.
Right, and when you in PowerShell also, you can call C#, you can call COM objects, but you have your own implementation of doing that. Well, in the DLR, they have the notion of this. What do they call it in the DLR? You can call Ruby, you can call COM, you can call Silverlight. I forget the word. I'm going to remember it in a second. But they also have call site, a generic sense of call site caching as well, so that if you did something inefficient in a loop, at least they're going to cache the call site. Does PowerShell have its own implementation of things like that, those optimizations like call site caching?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that. Not
binder, that was the word.
Yeah, the binding and the call site caching are two different things. So, yeah, in the DLR, the binder is a language-specific notion of, like, how do you decide what you're actually going to call.
Right.
And then the caching is the optimization aspect of that, so that you don't go in and rebind every time you make that call. You look at the types of the arguments and say, oh, I'm coming in with the exact same arguments. I don't need to go figure out if I'm calling this again or not.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where to go from here. And so PowerShell does a little bit of the call site caching.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do it in the same way that it's done in the DLR, but it does do that in some places, yeah.
So it sounds like the DLR would be a nice to have, but I mean, should people, I guess what I'm trying to understand is that people who are listening may be thinking, should I wait? Should I worry? Should I not think about PowerShell yet until they get their kind of their dynamic language story together? Or is PowerShell really more focused on being a great scripting automation system and not on being itself a full-fledged .NET dynamic language?
Yeah, exactly. PowerShell was designed for admins. And the fact that it's a really great scripting language on top of being able to do everything for admins is, in my mind, just a great bonus. It does, it does so much more than what you'd expect out of, a shell language.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, waiting or, anything like that, no, I mean, it's usable the way it is. You don't need
It's baked, right? I mean, it ships in what? Ships in 2008 R2, it ships in Windows 7.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's a robust language used by millions of people.
Billions and billions. So, Lee, what are some of the cool ecosystem-type things you've seen people writing on top of? Like, I remember the first thing that really blew my mind in PowerShell 1 was when a guy, I think we call him Mo, wrote what I can only describe as like an ANSI art-style IntelliSense in the DOS prompt.
Yeah, right.
By basically reflecting over the run space, looking at all the objects, and then doing some really amazing drawing just right on the console. But that was early on. I know a couple of years into it now, there must be some crazy ecosystem stuff built on top of PowerShell.
Yeah, I think the ingenuity has been amazing, and absolutely when it comes to thinking about PowerShell and the main focus of trying to make people's lives easier, when you sit and think back about all of the support of just managing Windows, that has always been these cryptic command line tools, if you were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And people realizing that PowerShell is here to stay, it's doing a great job, it's making people's lives better every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now everyone is sort of inside of Microsoft is noticing, outside of Microsoft is noticing. There's, tons and tons of features within Microsoft and companies outside of Microsoft that are building PowerShell commands as their main way of interacting with their system.
Yeah.
And we've seen entire products being architected on top of PowerShell, really, really driving the GUI separation to the absolutely next level.
One of the ones that blows me away is Power Gadgets. Is that what it is? Power Gadgets? I think that's the name of the company. Basically, it's a I have a bunch of data, like a bunch of processes. Git process is the perfect example, right, that you used before. So when you go and say something like, let's say, git process pipe sort VM descending. So I want all the processes, select first five. So the top five fat processes in my system.
Right.
And then PowerGadgets is a third party, I think. I think that's what it's called. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. And you basically say, that script block, make me a gauge that I'll put in my Windows 7 sidebar, my Vista sidebar, and then just keep updating it all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just these little one-liner, two-command things that take people at least hours to write in the regular Gadgets framework.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of interaction has been amazing. And in addition to that, sort of one of the things I was saying before is like entire products where people talk about, hey, I have my business layer and I have my UI layer. And so Exchange really turned the world on its head with their whole new product design decisions, which is everything is supported in the command line.
Mm.
And the richness of PowerShell lets them actually do that. If you imagine having an API that was straight text-based, it'd be mm-hmm. ridiculous, right? I want to get the list of mailboxes and you get back a text file.
It would be its own shell.
Right. And so by supporting, they wrote all the PowerShell commandlets to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, they wrote their user interface. Still a rich, beautiful user interface, but yet anything that you can do,
mm-hmm.
you can also automate. And that's just saved just hundreds and hundreds of trillions of dollars.
Trillions of trillions. So this is Exchange 2007 and up is what added that?
Yep, and you know, they've continued to build on that. Now they're working on a live version of Outlook and mm-hmm. Kind of just pushing that further and further, and that's the kind of thing. And also, there was this one guy. He wrote this robot that was controlled by PowerShell. You could like tell it to go forward and rotate right, and
as a scripting language, you could drop PowerShell into an existing application and just make it the core of your scripting language. It's almost like Visual Basic for applications. You basically just feed the C# or .NET objects into your PowerShell run space and say, I want PowerShell to have access to these.
Yeah, right.
Although I worry about that kind of stuff. Doesn't that mean that someone could script format C:? Like right there? Can I set up a blacklist? How do I keep someone from using my little application? Like, let's say I write a calculator and I make it scriptable and then the guy says, all right, script this, format C:.
That comes down, really down to the individual application, right? So if you're writing an application that supports user-generated content, and this, you know, you're going to have maliciously written anything, right?
You never know. I got to be careful, though, right?
Right. No, and that's absolutely, we support restricted run spaces, which is a new feature in version 2.
Oh, okay.
And
that's cool.
The idea there is you can only do as much in this run space as you let the person do. Mm. So you're going to for sure say, in this restricted version. And the really great way to think about this is sometimes you want to let somebody connect to your machine, but you don't want to let them run everything. You want to say, I'm going to give you four or five commands. I'm going to let you see what processes are in my system, run a couple specific WMI queries.
Right, but not kill processes.
And so we've really done a lot of work in our dev side of things in version 2 to make those easy to do. So you restrict down the language so that nobody's scripting against your system.
Hmm.
You give them a couple commands that they can run, and then you can be certain that that's all they're running in your system.
That's cool. You know, one of the other things that I really liked early on about PowerShell, and I just actually played with it a few minutes ago before you guys got here, was the notion of being able to say, like, write host or write progress bar, where you're basically saying, like in the instance of write progress bar, is that the name of the command?
Write progress.
Write progress was to say that I'm in the middle of doing something and I'm going to go and update it to 30% or 40%. And then without thinking, I was switched back over into the ISE that you'd mentioned before, Jason, the integrated scripting environment. And when I hit F5, did not see it coming, a dialog box popped up that was a graphical dialog box that looked like a nice, shiny, kind of cool looking progress bar. And then I realized it's in a different host, and it's going to do what's appropriate for that host. And I thought that was really cool.
And that's one of the things we've always tried throughout all of PowerShell is that, for example, you write one of the commandlets that Jason was talking about before,
mm-hmm.
or you write a commandlet in a PowerShell script.
Right.
And we keep on adding things to the PowerShell environment and the PowerShell engine all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep on getting new stuff for free. You know, mm-hmm. we add a new feature that says, hey, anytime this commandlet generates a warning, I want to take a specific action when that happens. Now, that didn't exist in version 1.
This is the eventing stuff, right? No?
Not really.
What is this then? Because you mentioned that eventing is new too.
Right, yeah. So
what's the one that you just mentioned about? If something generates a warning, I want to know.
Right,
about
so we added a new parameter, for example, to all commandlets in PowerShell version 2.
Ah.
And that's the one I was talking about was this warning action where you can take an action on a warning.
Ah.
But that's just an example of any time the engine gets better, then every commandlet gets better.
Because these are what they call ubiquitous parameters, is that right?
Yep. And just the whole concept of just like progress bars. You use write progress in your commandlet, or you use the script, or you use the commandlet to call it, then you get rich output on any host that supports it. So really just taking the core problem of all I want to do is implement my command, and you deal with all the user interface and the parameters and the shortening and globbing and aliasing. We just do an enormous amount of work on your behalf.
So if I wanted to write an application and host PowerShell, I could go and handle these progress bars for me, right? Like if I wanted the progress bar to appear in the status bar, I could write a host. Wouldn't it be too hard?
There are third-party hosts. There are several of them that are they're quite popular. There's PowerGUI and PowerShell Plus. Both of those may do things differently than the console or the PowerShell ISE, definitely.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you guys sitting down and taking the time. We're here in a kind of a busy area of the Commons, so if you heard people walking by, that's because we're kind of in a cafe area here. Thanks so much, Jason and Lee, for chatting with me today about PowerShell. You can visit the PowerShell blog. I think it's at blogs.msdn.com/PowerShell. Also, the Scripting Center up at TechNet. And I'll put a series of show links with some of the products that we talked about and other resources for people to look at. Again, thanks, gentlemen, for your time.
Thanks for having us.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.